Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting tight security for New Year's Eve celebrations. Happy New Year to our friends in Australia, where it's already 2016. In Sydney, one of the first population centers marking the dawn of a new year as Australians gathered to enjoy one of their biggest fireworks displays ever. 7 tons of pyrotechnics for a 12-minute show that cost $5.1 million. Elsewhere, 2015 is clinging to its final few hours. Security is tight at New Year's celebrations as authorities confront threatened possible terror attacks. Jakarta was on high alert after Indonesian police uncovered plans for a terror attack on the capital during the festivities. In Belgium, the capital's annual New Year's celebration was canceled due to fears of terrorism. Police in Brussels say they've arrested a 10th suspect in connection with the November 13th terror attacks in Paris that killed 130 people. They also reported Thursday that 6 more people have been detained for questioning about a suspected New Year's Eve terror plot. 2 people have already been detained for that same plot. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi has reiterated that Turkish military forces must withdraw immediately from Iraqi territory. The threat comes as Iraq accused Turkey of only partially withdrawing its tanks and soldiers in order to protect its training camp in Bashika in northern Iraq. But Mr. Davutoğlu dismissed the threat, saying that Iraqi forces should focus on Islamic State. This is VOA News. Thailand's military has stifled public dissent since it seized power last year, and the country's universities say that it has had an impact on campus. Academics, especially those teaching liberal arts subjects such as politics, say they are under the spotlight of the military government's curbs on political debate and human rights. Ron Corbin reports for VOA from Bangkok on what academics say is a climate of fear at universities.
New York-based Human Rights Watch says since Thailand's armed forces took power in May 2014, more than 750 people have been summoned to report to the military for reconciliation talks. Professors at the country's most elite universities have not been spared. Titipon Pakdiwanit is a political science lecturer at Ubon Ratchathani University. Titipon says the army has been a regular presence in classrooms and seminars.
It's a kind of climate of fear and intimidation.
In October, Thai Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha criticised university lecturers, accusing them of instigating rebellious thoughts and activities among students. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
Prime Minister Prayuth, in a year-end nationally televised speech, reminded Thais that the junta seized power in order to reform the nation and draft a new constitution. He said he expects democracy to return to the country following new elections expected in mid-2017. The outgoing UN envoy to Somalia, Nicholas Kay, says the country has an unstoppable momentum toward being a stable and secure state.
I believe that Somalia in the last 2.5-3 years has made significant political progress and has also made some reasonable security progress as well. And so I am optimistic that in 2016 there is an unstoppable momentum now.
Mr. Kay told VOA that Somalia has managed to convert a dream of being a federal Somalia into a reality. The country now has 5 interim regional administrations and federal member states, which he says brings government and accountability closer to the people. Mr. Kay is also encouraged by the progress made in preparing for national elections in the new year. Burkina Faso's Salif Diallo was elected head of the National Assembly, making the ally-turned opponent of ousted leader Blaise Compaoré the second most powerful man in the nation. And the United States has urged Ethiopia to free all journalists detained by the state and stop using its controversial anti-terror law to silence dissent. For more on all these stories, visit our website at voanews.com. Joe Palca reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to African News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on African News Tonight.
Farmers in Zimbabwe say they have been forced to sell the seeds and fertilizers supplied by the government for this year's planting season to avert a current hunger crisis. Diverting the farm supplies will have an effect beyond the agricultural industry.
That's Sebastian Monfou reporting from Harare. Details coming up.
Also, Reuters news agency says the pastor of a Rwandan church has been convicted of genocide and sentenced to life in prison. And Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he is willing to negotiate with the kidnappers of the Chibok girls.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Ghana, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the Associated Press reports that Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza appears to be sidelining Tutsi military officers and questioning their loyalty. The AP says as a result, military defections are increasing. A defecting colonel announced the creation of a new rebel group last week. The International Crisis Group says it shows that Burundi's military is no longer unified. Presidential spokesman Willie Nyamitwe describes reports of ethnic divisions within the army as opposition propaganda. Mr. Nkurunziza is a member of the Hutu majority.
Also, Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza says his country is not facing any political crisis despite ongoing violence and displacement. He also says that Burundi has a good relationship with neighboring Rwanda. From Bujumbura, Moses Javierimana reports.
Speaking on Wednesday in Gitega, President Pierre Nkurunziza dismissed any speculation that his country and Rwanda do not get along, despite ongoing insecurity and reports of arms smuggling from Rwanda.
Burundi and Rwanda relations will always be there, and good like it or not. We share many things in common. We are neighbors and we can't change that. So on Burundian side, I guarantee that the relationship will remain in good shape as long as I am still the president. Maybe it may change when I am not the president.
However, the Burundian government has accused Rwanda of sheltering rebels who reportedly give military training to Burundian refugees for possible attacks. The president said that his government had handed over evidence to the International Conference for Great Lakes Region to carry out an investigation.
Refugees International said it's clear that there are military trainings in refugee camps in Rwanda and given weapons to attack Burundi. We too have evidences. Those who attacked, some were killed and others arrested, and we have many evidences on this. They told us how they were training, how they were transported to the border, and others they were given. All these evidences, we handed them over to the ICGLR. We are waiting for the findings.
As Bujumbura awaits the ICGLR report, the African Union has approved the deployment of 5,000 peacekeepers in the country. Peaceful protests were conducted last Saturday countrywide against the deployment, but not all are against the move. I asked some Bujumbura citizens for their reaction.
In my own opinion, I think that the peacekeepers should come, because why should the government refuse if no crimes are committed? If it's true that the government is killing own citizens, it will be known. And if it's a lie, they will know, because the government said no crimes are made against the civilians, so they should come. I don't know why they are bothered that much to remove doubt in people. They should let the peacekeepers come.
waachie jeshi lije lihakikishe kweli usalama upo.
There's no need to deploy them in Burundi because Burundi is in peace. You see everybody, even if they shoot gun are headed in sometimes in different quarters, in general Burundi is in peace. Then there's no need to deploy them in our country.
Last month, the UN Security Council didn't approve the deployment of the peacekeepers, and in normal circumstances, it is the UN Security Council to take the decision. In that report, they said that they should respect the country's sovereignty and its independence. If they come without considering that, it will be invasion, and all Burundians will stand against them and fight them. The country will be under attack, and we will defend ourselves.
Deploy or not to deploy has been a debate among Burundians and international community. However, it is only through the approval of the UN Security Council that the African Union could deploy the troops. Meanwhile, peace talks are set to resume in Arusha next week. For VOA Africa, this is Moses Habyarimana in Bujumbura.
In related news, President Nkurunziza said that AU peacekeeper troops would be considered invaders if they entered Burundi.
Reuters news agency says the pastor of a Rwandan church has been convicted of genocide and sentenced to life in prison. Jean Yuen Kendi was the pastor of the Kayenzi Pentecostal Church. Prosecutors say the church is near where 2,000 bodies were found during the nation's 1994 genocide. The judge ruled the pastor led those who carried out the killings.
Farmers in Zimbabwe say they have been forced to sell the seed and fertilizer supplied by the government for the 2015-2016 planting season to avoid a hunger crisis. Sebastian Mumfu reports from Harare that diverting the farm supplies will have an effect beyond the agricultural industry.
At the height of Zimbabwe's farming season, the Sanyati farming area, some 250 kilometers southwest of Harare, normally would produce lots of cotton. It is an important income-earning multi-purpose crop spun into fabric for exports while its seeds are processed into cooking oil for local use. However, for many farmers, that is no longer the case. 34-year-old farmer Titus Maposa says cotton prices have declined so much that it is unprofitable. He says that for years he has been growing cotton, but now he says it is causing hunger. He says he sold the fertilizer he received from the government for $20 a bag. Others actually sold it for $10 a bag. Others are putting it in their maize fields. We will not grow cotton, he says. After the government noticed a decline in cotton production in the Sanyati area for the past years and a rise in the number of people asking for food handouts, it began giving free insecticides, herbicides, seed and fertilizer to farmers. But farmer Mutewa Majasi says that will not work unless the government addresses falling cotton prices. He says the government must tell us first the price so that we can decide to take supplies or not. They might offer us a lower price than last season of 3 cents a kilogram. Now they might offer us 2 cents or 1 cent. It is not clear. It's help, but they are not being helpful. Majasi says farmers have no options and are being forced. He says the government might force them to sell at whatever price since it gave them seeds and fertilizers. So he says the government must first consult farmers on which crops they want to grow, whether be it maize or sorghum. A government official in the area who requested anonymity to speak freely concurs with the farmers. He says many farmers take whatever the government offers because it is the only way to get a bag of fertilizer. He says the farmers will take the cotton seed but not grow the crop and instead use the fertilizer for maize production. But the official says that practice does not produce enough maize to stave off hunger and poverty in Zimbabwe. This comes at a time when the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization warns the Southern African region faces the possibility of floods and droughts induced by the El Nino weather phenomenon, which is predicted to be the worst since 1997. The United Nations says Zimbabwe is one of the countries with a food deficit, with more than 1 million people in need of food handouts. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The International Organization for Migration says a record number of nearly 3,800 migrants and refugees died this year trying to cross the Mediterranean. More than 75% of the deaths occurred when vessels sank between Libya and Italy. The highest monthly death toll occurred in April when about 1,200 migrants perished. 800 of those deaths occurred when one vessel sank off the coast of Libya. Also, German Chancellor Angela Merkel stands firm in her decision to open Germany to refugees in what she calls an opportunity for tomorrow. She says it is crucial that Germans not follow those who would lead with coldness or hatred in their hearts. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
He's Wuhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza says his country is not facing any political crisis despite ongoing violence and displacement. Reuters news agency says the pastor of a Rwandan church has been convicted of genocide and sentenced to life in prison. And farmers in Zimbabwe say they have been forced to sell the seeds and fertilizers supplied by the government to avert a current hunger crisis. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he is willing to negotiate with the kidnappers of 200 girls who were taken from their school dormitories in Chibok in northwestern Nigeria in 2014. Mr. Buhari made the comment in his first media chat with reporters since taking office in May. He said if a credible leader of Boko Haram militants could be found and the location of the girls could be established, his government is prepared to negotiate without preconditions for their return. There are fears the girls are being used as sex slaves or suicide bombers. There has been an increase in such attacks by young women in northern Nigeria. Also, President Buhari refused to discuss Shiite leader Ibrahim Zakzaki. He was detained December 14th after being wounded in military raids that left hundreds of his followers dead. The military said it had responded to attacks on the Army Chief of Staff's convoy. Mr. Buhari says he will not comment on the incident until an investigation is complete. In other news, the Associated Press reports Nigeria's government says it will not release two prominent detainees despite court orders to do so. A federal high court had ordered the unconditional release of Biafra separatist leader Nnamdi Kanu, who faced terrorism charges, and former National Security Advisor Sambo Dusuki, who was charged with diverting billions of dollars meant to buy weapons to fight against Boko Haram.
Egypt's new parliament is scheduled to convene January 10th. Elections for parliament were held on 2 days, October 17th and December 2nd. The French news agency says voter turnout was only 28%. It was the first parliamentary election since President Mohamed Morsi was ousted by the military in July 2013 and the crackdown on the now banned Muslim Brotherhood. Analysts say the new Egyptian parliament is expected to support decisions made by President al-Sisi. In other news from Egypt, officials say militants shelled a home near a security checkpoint in the northern Sinai in the city of Rafah. 5 people were killed. A teenager in a neighboring home was injured. No group has claimed responsibility yet.
The HIV/AIDS epidemic is 3.5 decades old. Much has been accomplished in recent years to prevent deaths and reduce new infections. And research continues on an elusive HIV vaccine. Among those following the latest developments is Mitchell Warren, head of the AIDS advocacy organization AVAC. From New York, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua on what was accomplished in 2015.
I would say 2015 was one of the better years in memory in many respects. Not a perfect year, but a terrific year filled with progress and particularly filled with opportunity.
In what way?
The world began to align behind the evidence. If I had to think of one day this year, it was September 30th when the World Health Organization issued its early preview of its new 2015 antiretroviral guidelines for treatment and prevention. Anyone diagnosed with HIV should be offered treatment upon diagnosis, and that anyone at substantial risk of infection should be offered oral pre-exposure prophylaxis or PrEP. The guidelines issued on September 30th signaled that that is the way in which the world should go in acting on evidence and translating it into impact, if we can. But that was a real turning point, I think, for the year and for the 35 years of the epidemic.
About how many people are on antiretroviral drugs right now, do you know?
Well, I do know, and this is one of the challenges now for 2016 and beyond. Of the 37 million people who we estimate are infected with HIV right now, all of whom are eligible for treatment based on WHO new guidelines, only about 16 million are on antiretroviral therapy. So great news, 16 million people on therapy by 2015. If you said that to someone in the year 2000, they would have said you were dreaming. But there's a gap. Over 21 million people who still need treatment aren't getting it. So we are not even halfway there.
Is the funding available to get the rest on treatment?
The funding is not currently available, and I will say that when we just saw the U.S. Congress put through its spending bill for the year, and unfortunately PEPFAR was flatlined, and that is a grave disappointment. This is a time of great scientific opportunity, of great public health opportunity, and the fact that the PEPFAR budget flatlines, it is a disappointment because we need to do better. That said, we are seeing great efficiencies in the system. And I think one of the issues going forward is not just the need for more resources, and clearly we have a huge resource gap, but what we are seeing is people recognizing that different kinds of care can be provided, that not every person needing treatment or needing prevention needs the same treatment and prevention. So there is a need to really do better with what we have, even while we clearly need more resources.
Let's talk about research. What is the status of vaccine research?
Well, you know, we sit here at the end of 2015 and we still don't have an AIDS vaccine. I will say, though, that 2015 was a year in which a number of really exciting scientific activities really took it to the next level. And it really is around a couple of primary areas of inquiry. In 2009, now almost 6 years ago, we saw the first ever result from a trial that showed that a vaccine might actually prevent infection, at least partially, from Thailand, the so-called RV144 trial. This year, 2015, international collaboration enrolled people in a early bridging study in South Africa, testing a modified version of that vaccine that we hope will do better. If that trial is successful, and we will know in 2016, then a large follow-on efficacy trial of this prime boost vaccine candidate would begin in South Africa. But even as that happens, there are two other exciting vaccine advances this year. One comes from the pharmaceutical company Janssen, part of the Johnson & Johnson family, and we have not seen the pharmaceutical industry invest their own resources in AIDS vaccine R&D for a very long time. Janssen, with a number of partners, is advancing their vaccine candidate into a number of clinical trials that might hopefully by early 2017 or so begin into large efficacy studies. And then the third area of great interest and intrigue is around the work related to broadly neutralizing antibodies. And instead of creating a vaccine candidate that would create an immune response, it's actually infusing this antibody directly to see if this antibody could actually provide protection.
And what about microbicides?
The lead microbicide candidate is actually a vaginal ring filled with an antiretroviral called dapivirine. This is a different approach. This is using a different antiretroviral in a ring that a woman can insert in her vagina once a month, and it stays in place, and it provides a certain level of drug on an ongoing basis. There are two large efficacy trials studying whether this ring actually can provide protection, and we will get the results of the first of those two studies early in the new year. One of the other important milestones in 2015 were the fact that over 10 million men in 14 African countries decided themselves to have voluntary medical male circumcision. The impact of circumcision is growing, and so we are really seeing antiretrovirals for treatment and prevention, the promise of a vaccine and a microbicide, and the role of circumcision and the role of other interventions really building out what has been, I think, a critically important year that I hope is a turning point to even greater things in 2016.
Mitchell Warren is head of the HIV/AIDS advocacy group, AVAC, from New York. He spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
This is African News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on the Voice of America. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to African News Tonight for the latest sports, features, and more coming up next right here on VOA. For the full hour of African News Tonight, tune in again at 1800 UTC.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one I judge. This one I judge.
Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers.
Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza says his country is not facing any political crisis despite ongoing violence and displacement. Reuters news agency says the pastor of a Rwandan church has been convicted of genocide and sentenced to life in prison. And farmers in Zimbabwe say they have been forced to sell the seeds and fertilizers supplied by the government to avert a current hunger crisis. Coming up, we'll have music from Ghana. And in our feature segment, South Sudan loses millions of dollars every year to corruption and the mismanagement of finances by government officials. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Swuhi, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Thursday, Sunny.
Happy Thursday, Kim.
Well, Sunny, understand an Ivory Coast football highlight tops your sports report.
Kim, African football's biggest tournament of 2015 culminated February 8th when Ivory Coast lifted the Nations Cup trophy in Bata, Equatorial Guinea. The elephants of Ivory Coast received a hero's welcome when they returned home to the commercial capital, Abidjan. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2015, let's listen in again to my report on the celebrations. Hundreds of thousands of fans were at the airport and on the streets as the team was paraded through the city. Atop one vehicle, Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara sat next to Yaya Toure, the team captain and four-time African Footballer of the Year, as the two held the Nations Cup trophy aloft and waved to cheering fans. Ivory Coast edged neighbor Ghana 9-8 on penalty kicks in the Nations Cup final. Speaking after the victory, Ivory Coast coach Herve Renard paid tribute to former team captain Didier Drogba, who retired from international football last year.
You know, one big player like Didier Drogba didn't win this cup with Ivory Coast, but it's a shame he's not there. And I would like to give him a part of this cup because he deserves not only the work of the last month, it's a work since a long time. You need to have humility. You don't achieve something in 1 month. You achieve something because you have a very good player. I think it's a team spirit made the difference.
That's Frenchman Herve Renard, who guided Ivory Coast to the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations football title. Coach Renard also led Zambia to the 2012 Nations Cup crown. Joining us now with more Nations Cup news is our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Auma.
The African Union has hailed the Confederation of African Football, CAF, Equatorial Guinea, together with the Equatorial Guinea head of state, Obianga Nguema, for staging an Ebola-free Orange Africa Cup of Nations, the Africa Union chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma disclosed in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. The successful staging of the event underpinned African solidarity to overcome the challenge posed by the outbreak of the Ebola virus, whose epicenter is in the Mano River region in West Africa. Dlamini congratulates Ivory Coast and Ghana for their brilliant display during the Nations Cup final.
Awards were handed out after the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Equatorial Guinea. A 23-year-old winger from Nations Cup finalist Ghana won two prizes, best player and best goal of the tournament, as we hear now from our African football guru, David Legg.
The MVP, Sonny, the most valuable player, that award has gone to Christian Atsu, who's got an awful lot of pace. But ironically, he did not make what I call the dream team, which is the team chosen by the CAF panel of experts. And I'm going to go through that now, Sonny. The goalkeeper is Ayman Matluti of Tunisia. I've got problems with that. I would certainly have given that to Felipe Ovono, the young Equatorial Guinea goalkeeper that everybody has been raving about. If we move on, Sonny, to the back four, it's Mandy of Algeria, Kolo Touré, the veteran from Ivory Coast, Jonathan Mensah of Ghana, and Henri Bedimo of Cameroon. Three midfielders were chosen. Serre D, that's the hard man from the Ivory Coast, the enforcer, so to speak. You've got Yaya Touré, no surprises there, four-time African Football of the Year from the Ivory Coast. And then I feel a surprise, Sibusiso Vilakazi from South Africa. A good footballer, but I'm not quite sure he's among the best 11 at the Cup of Nations. Up front, they chose three strikers, although I don't believe that Gervinho is technically speaking a striker as such. He's more of a winger from the Ivory Coast. André Ayew is definitely a midfielder. Again, I'm not sure why he's picked among the strikers. And then we have one genuine striker, Wilfred Bonny from the Ivory Coast. And a lot of people after the final said to me, Sonny, that they didn't feel that Bonny had a particularly good tournament, apart from one critical game, and that was the game against Algeria, where he scored two-headed goals. And I do wonder sometimes if the name, if the reputations of players sometimes gets them into these teams. To me, a couple of significant omissions. I've already mentioned Ovono. Another one was Serge Aurier. Now, Serge Aurier played on the right-hand side of the four-man Ivory Coast midfield, and everybody was raving about his consistency. And at the final, there was Frederic Kanute. Frederic Kanute, former Mali striker and a true star of African football, and he was raving about Aurier. So again, it's not just the media, it's the former stars who are talking about these players. And then you also had the leading scorer. Now, what happened with the leading scorer is you actually had five leading scorers. With three goals, you had Ahmed Akachi of Tunisia. You had André Ayew of Ghana. Javier Balbao of Equatorial Guinea. TV Bafuma of Congo Brazzaville. And Dia Merci Timbukani of the Democratic Republic of Congo. So all tied, Sonny, on three goals each. So what they did to split the players up is they looked at the assists. Assists means that you assisted in the scoring of a goal. And on that basis, André Ayew was named as the leading scorer in the competition, although he did share that honor with four other players. The Fair Play Award went to the Democratic Republic of Congo, and I salute them. They really were a well-behaved team. So team of the tournament, Sonny, and also those individual awards. And something to me very strange is that Christian Atsu, who was rated the best player at the tournament, does not make the team of the tournament.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Happy New Year!
Well, I'd like to invite our VOA listeners to send me your comments. We appreciate the feedback here at Voice of America headquarters in Washington. You can send me email at sonny@voanews.com. Sonny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y. And pick up a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. My full postal mailing address is The Sunny Side of Sports, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Room 1613, Washington, D.C., 20237.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. My Facebook friend, Hugh Malozzi, had a funny quip after I posted a photo of French coach Hervé Renard dancing shirtless with his Ivory Coast players after they lifted the Nations Cup. Hugh, who is originally from Zambia, writes, Sonny, the Elephants stole our coach. As I mentioned earlier, Coach Renard led Zambia to the 2012 Nations Cup Championship. And Elvis Edijala, writing from Lagos, Nigeria, commenting on that Facebook photo of Renard dancing with his players, says, "What a synergy between the coach and the players. Wow."
Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoje here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brilafm.net. I tell you this, it's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Early in the show, we heard French coach Herve Renard pay tribute to Ivorian football star Didier Drogba. You might say the 37-year-old Drogba made a big impact for the Montreal Impact. In his debut season in Major League Soccer, Drogba scored 11 goals in 11 appearances for Montreal. In addition, he was named the MLS Player of the Month for both September and October. And when you talk about Drogba's sudden impact for the Impact, let me take you back to September 5th. Drogba became the first player in MLS history to score a hat trick in their first league start. Additionally, the hat trick was considered a perfect hat trick by football purists. Drogba scored one goal with his left foot, one with his right foot, and one with his head. Meanwhile, there are reports out of London now that Didier Drogba will return to Chelsea in a non-playing role as an assistant coach under interim Dutch coach Gus Hiddink. The Montreal Impact say they want to accommodate Drogba's wishes to return to Chelsea, but they'd also like him back for the 2016 MLS season. Didier Drogba had his greatest and most productive years at Chelsea, scoring 164 goals in all competitions. The defending champion Blues of Chelsea have floundered this season and are currently in 14th place in the 20-team English Premier League. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Happy New Year to all our Voice of America listeners. Back to Yahya's Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Okay, thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, South Sudan losing millions of dollars every year to corruption and the mismanagement of finances by government officials. And next, unregulated gold mining in Kenya despite the known health risks. But first, some music. Here is Mr. Oduru of Ghana with Abiba.
Mayada, Macheke, Mayada, Macheke, Mayada. Mayada,
Abiba,
Mayada,
Abiba,
Mayada,
Abiba,
Mayada,
Abiba,
Mayada,
very good Abiba,
Mayada,
very good Abiba,
Mayada,
do you me Abiba,
Macheke,
Korisa, Abiba,
Mayada,
Yerusa, Abiba,
Macheke,
Korisa, Abiba,
Mayada.
Abiba,
Mayada,
Jimmy,
Mayada,
Sa,
Mayada,
Yeri Bodro, and through NTRP and DC law. Yenya Clinton near the Yako High Court. President Sekola at 2C saw. You and you are. Give me some more. The dead that's a tea pampa and it's raw. To start with the Ghana, you win it raw. Defend this or say go for any football. Me what did you see? Me pimp support. Miss Ramina so. Take tall. No be no commentary. You be a flaw. Grab your grab and your draw. Auntie your rabbit. Put on, put on. Miss Abiba. Swear hardcore. H, H, H.
Abiba, hey, Abiba. Abiba, hey.
Faina mama, mi babe so udo mi yo pa me duncha. Mi kain debi debi, danchi bi yuma. Uni makume mu imani me ni susruma pa. Sabo che adiza yo baba. Ni nante ni ni kasa kwa ma fanela. Ni ni kumi kwa ni 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 yuma ma. Ma, ma, ah, ah, ah. Show, adu wa mi wa ma unu ensanda. Mi ba me besu wa udo ni sa sindia. Yo, yo, show, show.
Apua nye mi suba ni a raw raw draws. Juice so krobo, wa ye dangerous. Paste mwa, kre mi kromo cross. Mi doni ne so so se a bele wo. Maya wakume mo boss, obi stem yaka, nami di ni cause. Me wa physical cross, me and tongue drops. Hey, me and cars, my name is Thor. When they was Caesar, farmer Caesar. Nami your domo bleeder. Nami who I put away, say class one teacher. Papa, touch my dear, say woman sister. OCP word, Osita. Paul, I'm a team, what's in the pizza? Bruta, the Bella, the network, Akaida. Hali, 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 Mr. Duro, better.
Abiba, eh, Abiba, Abiba, eh, Abiba, eh, very good Abiba,
Ayada.
Very good Abiba,
check it,
Juju me, Abiba,
Ayada.
Konsa, Abiba,
check it,
Yenosa, Abiba,
Ayada.
Konsa, Abiba,
Ayada.
Ghana's Mr. Aduru with Abiba.
Well, before fighting broke out, the ruling SPLM party was accused of widespread corruption. One Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit says Juba could be losing millions of dollars every year to corruption and the mismanagement of finances by government officials. Justine Fleischner, a policy analyst with the Enough Project, spoke to reporter Ayan Bior. Fleischner says now that SPLM-IO officials are back in Juba, significant progress can be made on implementing the peace deal and ending corruption.
South Sudan actually has some of the most robust rules and regulations on things like revealing beneficial owners of different companies and public disclosure rules for officials that are working in the Ministry of Petroleum to ensure that there are no conflicts of interest. A lot of it is just about, A, making sure that civil society groups are aware of what already exists in these rules and regulations and how they can use those, and then also ensuring that there is space for civil society and for journalists to operate in the country to report on instances of alleged corruption without retribution or retaliation against them. And that's something that needs to be prioritized in diplomatic circles. The report talks about sources of conflict financing. It talks about policy tools and interventions that are available to the international community to push the economy towards peace as a whole, rather than just talking about kind of the political and the diplomatic side of things.
And could you give us examples of what those policy tools and intervention tools are that that people can use to stop the illicit economy in South Sudan?
The Department of Treasury in the United States has a financial crimes enforcement network. There's also the Department of Justice has a new bureau for kleptocracy. And these are some of the bilateral tools that exist in addition to kind of more multilateral efforts to tackle corruption, money laundering, and other activities like this.
And in the report, you wrote about war profiteers. Could you tell us what that's about?
These are individuals and entities that seek to profit from the turmoil created by conflict, whether that is providing loans and support in exchange for access and entitlements later on. It could be from doing arms trafficking or providing other sources of material or financial support to the warring parties. And so this is something that needs to be investigated further. Specific individuals and entities have to be looked into in order to ensure that there aren't individuals that are actually profiting from the continuation of the conflict.
The first batch of SPLM-IO advance team has landed in South Sudan today. Is there a chance that the leaders, both political leaders as well as IGAD Plus and JMEC, are better positioned to stop the flow of illicit economies in South Sudan?
Now that we are beginning to see the parties return to Juba to make progress in implementation, can we also now move forward on the ambitious reform agenda laid out in the peace agreement with oversight and accountability from JMEC? And so that remains to be seen, but this is absolutely a critical first step in that direction.
That was Justine Fleischner, policy analyst with the Enough Project. She spoke with reporter Ayan Bior from New Jersey.
The Osori mine in western Kenya is home to about 3,000 small-scale miners who risk their lives in search for gold. The operations are largely unregulated, and miners use toxic mercury to extract the gold, despite the known health risks. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Osori.
24-year-old Fred Visengi looks for gold in ore he extracted from a nearby mine. The tools of his trade, mercury, water, and a metal bowl. He has been doing this for the past 4 years, earning about $100 per month. Visengi knows the mercury is dangerous.
The government has not provided an alternative way of extracting gold or any other chemical. If we got a solution from the government, we would be in a better position to help improve our extraction methods.
Side effects of handling mercury include damage to the brain, liver, and lungs.
I cannot stop mining because this is how I earn my living. If I stop working, where will I go? I have to mine, even if it's harmful to my health. I have no choice.
Artisanal or small-scale mining is illegal in Kenya, but the ban is rarely enforced, nor are work conditions regulated. Injuries are common, as miners can lack even helmets and boots. David Maganya, the founder of the NGO iHope, says he is making little headway in training miners on safety measures when it comes to mercury and other risks.
The challenge comes in terms of affordability. Like we talk about, they have to use the personal protective equipment, that is the nose masks, the gloves, and all that. It is difficult for them to afford this one on a continuous basis.
Legalizing artisanal mining could be a first step to improvement. A bill to regulate both large and small-scale mining is before Parliament.
One, licensing. They need to be licensed so that they know where to go. Secondly, there needs to be land use plan for the areas and identification of the spots that they can specifically go to do their mining from these places. This is wealth that is available and they should be able to get it.
The miners formed a labor union 4 years ago to advocate for protective gear and support for miners disabled or injured on the job. The union is trying to partner with a German organization to obtain the gear at a reduced cost. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Osiri, Kenya.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States condemns the terrible attacks carried out by Boko Haram in Nigeria, December 25th to 28th, as well as other recent attacks in Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In these attacks, Boko Haram killed dozens of innocent people who were targeted as they went about their daily lives, attending service at a mosque, shopping in a neighborhood market, or simply traveling down a road. We extend our deepest condolences to the families and loved ones of the victims, and we stand with the people of Nigeria and the region in the fight against Boko Haram. Boko Haram has no regard for human life. Its vicious attacks against the innocent, including women and children, and its use of children as human bombs prove its true nature as a purveyor of hate and terror. Although Boko Haram may be able to kill innocent people, it cannot succeed in imposing its will on the people of Nigeria and the other countries of the Lake Chad Basin. The people of this region are not cowed by Boko Haram. They continue to demonstrate remarkable resilience and unshaken resolve in living their lives as they work, take care of their families, and go about day-to-day living. The United States remains committed to helping Nigeria and its neighbors counter Boko Haram's senseless acts of terror. Despite much progress over the past year, due in large part to newly bolstered Nigerian and regional efforts, more work remains to ensure the people of Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria can live in peace. The conflict has affected the lives of communities across the Lake Chad Basin region, with some 2.5 million internally displaced people and more than 170,000 Nigerian refugees forced to flee their homes. The United States provides advisors, intelligence, training, logistical support, and equipment to our African partners as they work to defeat Boko Haram. We also support those affected by Boko Haram's violence through ongoing humanitarian aid and victim support services. The United States will continue working with our partners in the region to identify new opportunities to support their efforts to stop Boko Haram's wanton violence and restore order in the Lake Chad Basin region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
VOA News.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.